Primary threat spotted.
Moving into position.
I crave the strength and certainty of steel. Cadia marks the boundary where reality and unreality meet.
Of course, we didn't expect to die out here. You know, I'm beginning to wish I'd asked for more money.
D20 Radio, where gamers roll. D20Radio.com.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. I am here with Duncan Rhodes from Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy, and it is a great honor and pleasure to have you on the show once again. How are you doing? I hear it's a little cold where you're at right now.
Yeah, sure is. I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm currently sat in a little office with a little heater going. I've got a blanket over me because it was raining all morning and then snowing, and it's freezing cold, so I'm trying to fight off the chill.
So before we get into just talking about the show, I did want to ask a question because I know a lot of people, especially myself, we all use airbrushes and, spray cans of paint and whatnot. And a lot of people say that cold weather is not great weather, or hot weather is not great weather for priming your minis. Is that true? Is there any substance to that statement when people say, you know, it's got to be like just right, you know, like a 70, you know, no humidity, really nice? Because, you know, some people live in different humidity, different climates across the world. And you are kind of the expert on this topic.
Well, I think through just experience, it depends on what the paint is, what the manufacturer is, and whether it's varnish or not. So spray varnishes, I'd always be very careful about spraying them in this kind of cold weather or excessively hot weather, because it can behave very strangely. And then you get that horrible sort of disappointing moment where it goes all foggy and cloudy and ruins your miniature when you thought you'd finished it, you know, and it was the last step and you ruined it. So I'd be very careful in that way. Yeah. And I found that... Actually, a number of Citadel sprays are very reliable in all kinds of weather. Sometimes Chaos Black goes a bit shiny, but you can still paint over it. But I find that Mechanicus Standard Grey and Xandri Dust behave very reliably in all weathers I've used it. I've even sprayed a bit, you know, sort of standing in a doorway when it's snowing outside and it's been fine. So, those ones I find are pretty safe to go to. But yeah, I found with other sprays and other colours from like all over the place, it sometimes goes on too thickly or you get sort of like weird bumps on it and things like that. So there is a bit of truth to it. But yeah, if in doubt, I'd recommend Mechanicus Standard Grey and Xandri Dust.
Okay, perfect. Well, there you go, listeners. We have an answer from one of the top professionals. So let's talk a little bit about the Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy. Last time you came on the show, you had just gotten started, and I've been watching it, and it seems to be growing. I really liked your Darth Maul video. I thought that was amazing that you knew what the emitter of lightsaber was. Not many people do, and I was yeah. Kind of geeking out. I was like, oh, man, this guy knows his stuff. I'm so happy.
Yeah, man. I in my younger days, I was very much a big Star Wars nerd, and so I used to like read all about this stuff, look into like the diagrams explaining how lightsabers apparently work and stuff. So it was quite fun to be able to say all these things in videos. It's been going really well. It's been quite an incredible year. It's gone so fast, really flown by, because we launched, it was in March, and since then it's been like blink and you miss it. The year's just suddenly seemed to come to an end. We've got, I believe, over 85 videos now. We've been, I think, averaging two a week. We've been doing sometimes three, sometimes one. It kind of depends. There was one week where we did four. And they've all been on such a huge variety of topics, enabling us to do all these different techniques and things and having a good time with them. We did a retro video just recently where we painted a Blood Angel Space Marine, but we did him as if he was in second edition, and we got one of the models from the time. So you can see on his the little tab on his base, he's, you know, timed as 1992. And in fact, the slotter base he's on even has copyright 1992 GW underneath it. So it's really fun being able to do stuff like that. And like you mentioned with Darth Maul, with Obi-Wan Kenobi, we had a go at putting loads of puns in, loads of jokes, see if anyone would notice. With Darth Maul, we wanted to, but he didn't really say anything, and that then became the joke in that one at the end, where we're like, yeah, we wanted to, but we couldn't. But with Obi-Wan, we had loads, and we did it with Metallica as well. We started putting in names of Metallica songs into the tuition, but it was never to, like, we don't want to overtake the tuition with making jokes. We wanted to fit in seamlessly. There was another one we did it with. I skipped my mind. We've been having a good time doing that sort of thing now and then. And we've got some great ideas for some things coming up as well, doing that kind of stuff. But nothing to overtake what the core tuition is, because we've been finding the memberships, like, it's been going way better than we expected it to. The whole site took off better than we expected it to. And it was super scary because, you know, Roger and I, we essentially taught ourselves everything we needed to run a business and make a website and run a membership site and troubleshoot it. And so it was super scary, but it's all been working out. We're stable. We're coasting along nicely. We're getting content people want to see. We've got a whole host of great relationships with people out there in the industry. It's been, you know, one heck of a year. And it's also been a really fun little aspect for me of people freaking out when I say, this paint's from the Army Painter, or this one's from Vallejo. because everyone's going to use me only for Games Workshop. And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm aware of all of this stuff. In this video, we're going to paint this miniature from War Machine. And people are like, he knows they exist. Well, of course I do. So, yeah, it's been great.
So what has that transition been like going from... And, like, we're not trying to bash GW at all. I'm just saying, like, when you work for GW, obviously you are going to promote GW products. But now that you're an independent content creator, you can talk about whatever you want. And it is kind of funny. People are like, whoa, he knows about, like, not GW products? Like, well, yeah. I mean, like, you're in the industry. You've been doing this for a while. Is the community response, like, do you find that funny or interesting? Like, how does that play? Because obviously you know of it, but... you've been in the industry so long with Games Workshop that people haven't heard it. So from your perspective, it doesn't matter because you've always, you know, used whatever you wanted privately. And now that you're publicly able to say, I like, you know, X, I like Y, I like Z, and people go, what? You know, is that, how do you feel about that?
It's very curious, but I can sort of understand it from their point of view. I imagine it's a bit like a TV show or something like that. And then you find out that someone who's in that TV show likes a thing that you like, you know, kind of like a sort of connection, I think. It sort of like humanizes stuff. Because when you're looking at something that's like a business entity, it is a business entity. So I think it's been fun seeing the kind of reaction to, oh, you are a human, you know, behind it. And I've always tried to be like that with Games Workshop. You know, I've always been very open and honest about things. And in fact, anyone who went to any of these sessions I did at things like Adepticon and stuff, we sometimes would talk about different things in the industry and different games, and it was quite fun in person then to actually be discussing it. But yeah, I find it really interesting because, I mean, I know there's a guy at Games Workshop who absolutely loves Harry Potter. He's a huge Harry Potter fan. And so the, you know, Knight Models do the Harry Potter miniatures game. He just buys everything from that by default because he loves it. He just loves it so much. He's like, I'm having all of it. And so, you know, I know that that's a guy at Games Workshop. Well, everyone at Games Workshop got their own interests. I mean, when the Game of Thrones TV show was going, everyone would be talking about that every week. So people are going to be interested in, you know, they're going to know about all the things. Like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if there was a Game of Thrones war game? And lo and behold, there kind of is now, you know, with the Ice and Fire one. So, yeah, they're people too. It's the different paints and hobby tools, I think, that's been the most interesting. Because obviously at Games Workshop, you'd only do the Games Workshop things, which is, you know, purely makes sense. It's an odd thing when people think, though, that I was only using the Games Workshop stuff because, like, I'd be like, yeah, I want to sell loads of Games Workshop stuff and not anyone else's. And honestly, I didn't care about it from that perspective. I just wanted to teach people how to paint their toys like the other box. And it was a great platform for doing that. You know, the stuff I'd use was obviously because we sold it. But if it didn't work, I wouldn't use it. And I was always very, you know, very stubborn and sticking to those kind of rules. So, yeah, now it's nice to be able to sort of expand and try these different things. And the one that stood out a lot, actually, was a wet palette, because we got hold of a wet palette. I've been hearing about them for years. I never really used one because, of course, Games Workshop didn't sell one. So, and I was used to using a regular palette, so I just carried on using a regular palette. After leaving, we just thought, you know, why not give one a go? So we got one from the Army Painter. And it's like, oh, actually, this is really cool. This is really useful. I like how the paint behaves here, and it sort of responds in a different way, which allows me to do different things. It makes things like glazing easier, for example. Wicked. Okay, in that case, that's a great result. We'll use that for the purposes we want to use that. But I'm still very comfortable with the normal palette. So, you know, for my own stuff, I sometimes use normal palette. So what we present in the videos is all very honest to how I actually do my hobby. And we kind of thought that, you know, that's one of our greatest assets, really, because, like, if I do it because it works and I understand it, then when I'm talking about that in a video, people will then understand that, and it comes from a very honest place. It's been a fascinating experience. It really has. And I think I've learned a few new things too, and tried out some new things. We tried using some more advanced weathering stuff, you know, scale modeling stuff like enamel paints and white spirits and things like that. And that's been really fun to do as well. And it's been a challenge for us to then go through our process, because, of course, the Games Workshop method, it was Roger was the one who instigated it, really. Taking that format, seeing what adjustments we can make to it to update it a bit for what we wanted to do and what equipment we had available to us, and then start using these new tools and equipment that we've never used before. It's quite a challenge to work out how to show it. And then for me to explain how to use it is quite a big deal. So when we were doing these enamels and things on this, it's a car from Fallout Wasteland Warfare. It's the Corvega sedan. It's like a piece of scenery they've got. We're doing rust streaks down the side of it, and going through the whole process of explaining all this kind of stuff, it becomes a very, very long sequence where I need to do it all in one with no mistakes. And it's quite a challenge then, because I'm used to doing my regular stuff, but this is something different. So it gets quite exciting, you know, and it pushes me to expand my skills a bit. So I've had a blast. It's been really, really cool. It's been really exciting. And it's always fun seeing what new things are available and what we can try doing. And we've got lots of ideas for the future as well for this kind of thing.
That's so exciting. I really, really love and appreciate the graphics that you put up on your videos, because you have the paint and the name of the paint, the company who makes it, then you have the brush, and the name of the brush, and the company who makes it as well. So people can easily take the content you're making and not only learn, but they can go and purchase the same products easily. It's like so much more approachable than previous content from other people, because, you know, you see a brush, you see a paint, and you don't know what they're doing, and sometimes they don't say what it is, and you're like, you're in the comments going, does anyone know what that is? And, you know, there's like 30 people trying to figure it out, and you guys completely remove all questions, and it's so great. And I push so many people to those videos because they don't know what to use, or they don't know a technique, or they're like, what paint do I use? Go watch this video. It'll tell you everything you need to know. And it's so, so profoundly simple. And I think that's a really big selling point for all the stuff you make. And I appreciate it, because I've been doing this for a while, and it's still sometimes I forget something. I'm like, all right, I got to go watch this video, because I remember it's got exactly what I need to know. And, it, you know, it's such a great reference point for so many people painting and doing miniatures.
You know, I'm really glad you say that, because we always try and make it so it's all stuff that you can easily get. Even if it's something that might not appear in your regular, you know, gaming store, it's going to be something you can easily buy online at, you know, these big stores or little hobby online stores or wherever you want to get them. It's all stuff that's, you know, in production. And that came up as a bit of a question. Roger and I had quite a discussion before we did that retro Blood Angel video that came out just a few weeks ago. As you can see in all the comments, people are telling us that you can still buy these paints from a company called Côte d'Armes, which we're aware of. And that was like a failing on my point in the video. I should have said, now, if you want to use the paints from the time, you can get them from this company and explain, but we're not going to use them. And the reason why is because we want to use paints that you will probably have in your collection to make this retro style. So whilst it's not the actual, you know, paints of the time, because if we could have sourced a number of paints if we wanted to, but then people might not have them. And so we wanted to have that accessibility. But yeah, the thing is, because we didn't say that, we got a million comments like saying, you can still buy these paints. We're like, oh yeah, we know. And we wish we told the audience when they're watching, so that anyone who's not aware would then immediately get information. So, you know, it's like, well, next time. You know, we're not omnipresent or anything like that, but you definitely want to try and get that core information that people will want to know. We want to make sure we cover that sort of stuff. So there's always room for improvement with that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about all the toys you've been playing with since we last hung out. Have you found anything you've just fallen in love with? I mean, I know there's all kinds of new stuff coming on the market. You know, we talked about contrast last time. Color Shift is really popular right now. People are getting really high into that. There's new colored metallic paints coming out from the Army Painter. That's starting to get a lot of hype. You know, I saw that you were enjoying that Regiment brush, and you know, you're playing with a wet palette, and you know, there's so many different things you can kind of fiddle with. Have you found any favorites? You're just like, this has been a great experience with, like, you know, these items.
I mean, we've got the metallic set from Army Painter, which I've been toying around a little bit with, but I haven't got that much experience with it just yet. But you know, I want to make sure I'm on top of something before it appears in a video. But I have been gradually using more and more Army Painter products, and I found that their Regiment brush is a really, really good piece of kit. Because, like, you know, when you're in the hobby for a while, you realize that every brush is a bit different. Like, even if you have like a band of, like, if you took 20 Regiment brushes, they're all going to be slightly different. But I found one that was like a little bit narrower than the previous one I used, and it held a point like nothing else I'd ever encountered. And it looked like at the end of the ferrule where it meets the actual handle, there's like a few bristles sort of sticking out of it. So it almost looked like it's faulty, but this brush is perfect. So Roger and I named it Excalibur, and I've been using it for basically everything. I've even painted eyes with it. It's incredible. So we have a nicer one that we use, but we got a bunch of these packs with the Regiment brushes in, and we're finding, oh, consistently they are actually quite a bit more narrow than the first one I used. So actually, this thing works really well for my technique. So I've been using it more and more and more, and it's been gradually replacing all of my Citadel ones. It's great. It's I've been using that, and of course experimenting with the wet palette too. I've been finding that's really useful. Very convenient for carrying around as well. So for keeping all my things stored away, I live with my girlfriend who wants to make sure that all my hobby stuff is always tidily packed away, you know, when I'm not using it. So having a little wet palette with a little thing to put my brushes in and fold away very nicely means I don't get in trouble. So that's been great. I've also found from Army Painter, I really like, there's two colors which I've been using a lot for just pure white and pure black. So that's matte white and matte black, which have effectively replaced White Scar and Abaddon Black for me, because I find the performance of both of them is just amazing on the coverage and how they flow, the quantity you get, how long they last, they don't dry out because they've got the dropper bottles, all that sort of thing. Those are fantastic. And in fact, dropper bottles, I suppose it's quite funny, a lot of this is going to be equipment that people are completely used to, and I'm like, oh, you know. But you know, whilst I've been aware of them and dabbled them, it's over the year that I've really been significantly using them. Those are the things that I've most stood out to me, I think. But there's a whole host of things out there, and we do certainly get a lot of companies getting in touch with us wanting us to use these bits of gear, and so we sort of stick to the what we think did well at Games Workshop, which was to we'll try the thing. If I really like it, and I'd not endorse it, but if, you know, if someone was like, oh, which one should I buy, should I buy this, if I go yes because I've used it and I found it to be great, then we'll use it in videos. If I don't like it, then we just won't use it. And so we find this is the best way to be positive about things and sort of recommend things, because people then actually see it in use. Of course, that said, there's still a million things out there which I've not tried yet, because the industry is huge these days.
Oh, that's exciting. So when are we going to see the two thin coats, white and black, from Army Painter now? That's where we're going with all of the fun stuff.
Well, I don't know, man. I don't know. But it's like this year has been crazy. We are, like I say, it's not just companies who make hobby products, but companies who make games have been getting in touch with us. Leaving Games Workshop is quite a scary prospect, because you go out into the world. But when you are out in the world, you can see just how big it is and how many things there are. And we're having a great time being like an independent little business moving around in all this sort of stuff. I don't know. We've got some real exciting opportunities, and we're not being careful not to rush into anything. But the fear of, you know, like, oh God, will we leave and then no one will care anymore? We've definitely discovered that that's absolutely not the case. People like what we do, and so we're going to keep on doing it, and we're going to do it as affordably as possible, whilst also allowing ourselves to eat.
Yeah, that's absolutely wonderful. Well, let's talk about some of the models you've been working on during the pandemic. Have you found any favorites that you're just in love with that you're, you know, you're either really excited to paint, or after you're done painting, you're like, wow, that looks like really good. Let's go play a game like right now and put this on the table.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Obviously, this year has been a crazy year for everybody. And, you know, with lockdowns aplenty and things, I found myself just sort of, you know, painting stuff, just kind of to keep myself occupied, I suppose, alongside what we're doing for the academy. And then, of course, in the academy, we get sent stuff. And this will be things that I might not have actually, you know, tried before. So, for example, I was aware that Modiphius, because they do a war game on Fallout, and I'm sure everyone's aware of Fallout, and they announced that they were doing one on Elder Scrolls, and I really like the Elder Scrolls. I'm a massive fan of the Elder Scrolls. That's amazing. I spend hours playing those games. I love the stories and the lore about it. But we were, of course, setting up a business, so it sort of passed me by, and they got delayed in the process of, you know, COVID happening. And then we did a video on, it was a Super Mutant. And they got in touch and they're like, oh, would you like to have a go doing an Elder Scroll thing as well? And we're like, oh, yeah, that's come out. Yeah, sure. Like, okay, do you want the plastic or resin ones? We were like, oh, I didn't know you had plastic ones. Let's have a look at those. And, you know, making plastic frames is not an easy thing. And it's an expensive thing. And if it goes wrong, it's a big issue. But these they sent us one of the three core kits. So there's like a Delve set where you get some of the Draugr and you get the Dragonborn. Then there's an Imperial set and a Stormcloak set. And I was blown away by the frames of them. And so I got really excited about the Imperials. So I then went out and bought my own box of Imperials so I wouldn't go and paint the ones that we're going to use for a shoot. And I painted them all so fast. I was like, these are amazing. I then went and bought the Stormcloak and finished all them. And then the Delve set with the Draugr and everything for myself and painted all them. And then all the resin sets started coming out. And I've just been collecting them all. I love them. It's like, I've sort of found myself in the frame of, oh, so a new set's coming out. All right, I'll collect it. And I've just been buying these things as they come out. And, you know, they will send us things for video content, but I'm still like, yeah, whatever, I'm buying them. So, yeah, Elder Scrolls, Call to Arms have been a great thing, especially because Modiphius are sort of approaching the war games industry in a different way to a lot of companies, because a lot of games are all done in a very sort of competitive way, in that if the competitive game works and is fun and is balanced, then the sort of the more casual game is a sort of like flow down from that. And they'll know that the casual game, well, that's still going to be balanced, but it still sort of encourages competitive play. Modiphius are very much all about creating narrative gameplay, so more in flavor of a role-playing game. So Elder Scrolls and Fallout as well is, you can play it by yourself in that the game will play against you. So there's kind of like the bad guys have, you roll a dice and consult this chart in their turn, and it kind of, they behave in the way that they would in the video games. So I've found that I painted a whole collection of these models, and I've been playing the game as well. So even if I'm stuck indoors, I can go and play Elder Scrolls. It's great. And so I've been going on adventures, like hunting for magic items and stuff. And the game just then forms its own story. So I was playing a game. I put it on Twitter, actually. I put a battle report on there. I had a Imperial character and a bunch of soldiers, and we're fighting against the Draugr. And there was a bunch of treasure that I was trying to get. I was like, oh, these are wicked magic items. So I kept sending a soldier to him, get it, and it'd be an amazing item. And then he'd immediately get shot by a skeleton and killed. Like straight away, item lost. Oh, great. So eventually my hero goes and gets one, and it's like a rubbish item. Like, oh, it's another healing potion. Great. Ooh. So it's really fun. I've been having a great time with that. That's just one of them. So yeah, Elder Scrolls Call to Arms. If you're into narrative gaming, I definitely recommend it. And if you like sci-fi, a bit more of fantasy, Fallout Wasteland Warfare is like the science fiction version. They're quite similar. Those are fantastic. You don't need many models to play either, like five miniatures and you're set to go. I have also painted a load of House Targaryen stuff for A Song of Ice and Fire, because Cool Mini or Not came out with that faction right at the start of the year, and I bought it just before lockdown happened. So I painted that whole set and I had some fun with those. I'm painting Night's Watch for that as well. I even managed to go to a tournament in a little window of the lockdowns here in the UK, and I took my Targaryens to that, and I had a great time with that. So, yeah, that was really, really fun. I've also been painting some War Machine figures. I've been painting some Crucible Guard for that, because they've got this sort of like alchemical mad science kind of feel about them. And the miniatures are wonderful. They're resin metal hybrids and the details so crisp on them, and there's so much character to them. So I've been enjoying those, played a few games of that. And that game doesn't behave in the way I expected it to. but it's actually, if you approach it thinking in the way of like Warhammer with units and things, it sort of feels weird. But as soon as you realize that whilst your units stay together, they are essentially individual models, suddenly it all starts making sense. So that's been a really exciting experience. And just recently, I've been on a bit of a retro drive, and I managed to get hold of a copy of Starship Troopers, which was a war game back in 2005. And yeah, did you ever see that one?
I've seen it once or twice at conventions. I've never played it, but I'm like, wow, that looks kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was great. It was a real shame that it didn't go on for very long. As I understand it, there was a second edition that got very complicated in its release schedule. And then, as I understand it, the license renewal, the price jumped up enormously because there was another movie coming out, and the company making it, Mongoose, couldn't afford to carry it on at that point. And as I understand it, that's kind of what happened. But it was a really good game. It was a really, really good game. And for its time, it was very advanced and very tense, because you had, like, a core mechanic of it is a reaction. So if, like, you have a unit that completes an action within 10 inches of the enemy can then react. And because one side is the bugs and they're all close combat, the other side is the humans who are all about shooting, it meant that when the firefight started happening, the bugs would respond by charging at you. And then in your turn, the bugs would attempt to charge you again and get closer. Your reaction would be to fire, but then in the firing phase, you might run out of ammunition. So a bit like Space Hulk, if anyone's ever played that, when you have a gene stealer running at you and your gun jams. It's that kind of thing. And it led to just really exciting games. So I can't quite remember what it was that made me think of it. I think it was a comment in one of our painting videos. Someone said, can you paint a mobile infantry soldier from the movies? And I was like, oh, I remember that game. I looked at that for years. And it just led me down a path to going and finding a box set of it that I managed to get from a chap on a Facebook group who kindly sold me one. And so I've been playing around with that. I'm not sure really exactly like how far I'm going with it, but I'm just having a good time painting the models and just enjoying myself. Trying to figure out the correct green for the armor of my soldiers at the moment is what I'm doing with that. All kinds of stuff. I've really been sort of whimsically running around all kinds of different games, but that's very much me. So, all those games I certainly recommend. If you're looking for something different, I would recommend all those games I just listed there because they're all really good fun.
Man, you are on a grand adventure. Well, let's pivot a little bit to the production side of the YouTube channel and the stuff that you work on, because a lot of people like knowing about the behind the scenes kind of work. So the first question I want to pose is, where do you guys get, like, how do you decide what you're going to paint? There's, you know, all these games that you've played, there's things that companies are sending you, there's things that you guys probably have on a list that you want to paint, and that's obviously more than the time you have available. So do you guys have, like, what's your selection process to say, hey, you know, we're going to do Maul, we're going to do this Blood Angel, we're going to do, you know, X, Y, and Z? Because I think that's an interesting kind of thought process when you guys are having to parse through so many options in this very wide and immense hobby community to kind of, you know, pick and choose your targets that create content that people can watch and enjoy.
It's a very, very difficult process. There's been a lot of things to learn. There is a lot of difficult stuff about running a business. And it's just Roger and me. So it's just the two of us, and we've kind of like carved up all the different duties that we have to do between the two of us so everything runs smoothly. But we have every month, we kind of go through our list of what we want to do that month, and we have various slots and things. And it's very difficult because there's so many things out there and so many people want to see all these different things. So covering it all while staying relevant with the new thing or a thing that people want to see is extremely difficult. Now, we do know that there's a number of things that are more popular than others. Like, for example, Warhammer 40,000 is like the premier war game out there. So you've got to do Warhammer 40,000 content. But then at the same time, you can't do so much that you forget everything else. So we sort of list in a week or in a month, we kind of slot in the different systems that we're mostly covering with a few free ones for things that are going to be a bit unusual. And then after that, we start writing it in, and it'll be based upon what our members are asking for, because, well, we invite them to email us. We also have a forum now where they can literally write what they want to see and we'll discuss it. And so we'll sort of like scribble those things in that people want to see. So, for example, we've got a Drakari Incubi on the way. I finished just planning it. Well, not planning it, building it today. We were going to do it a week before, but I've got a bit of a nightmare situation with a COVID scare that stopped us filming for a bit. But yeah, so we're going to be doing that soon. And that was because a member asked us that they were trying to paint them, but they were really struggling with painting the faceplate. And so we were like, oh, okay, so would you guys like to see some more aliens in general? And the overwhelming response from the forum was yes. So, oh, okay, wicked, we'll pencil that one in. So it's all done that kind of way. And we largely have a number of games that we're committed to. So we do a lot of A Song of Ice and Fire. We do World War II stuff, which is generally bolt action miniatures. We have a historical section that we're kind of doing like two sides for each. So we did Napoleonic with a French and a British soldier. We've done a Roman so far, so we're going to be doing a Gaul to fight against him. And then, you know, we want to do like a Greek and a Persian and, you know, a Union and a Confederate soldier and so on and so forth. So we have a list of these things, these major things that we do. And so we'll pen those in. And then any gaps we've got left over, we'll look to do something a bit unusual, like something from Wild West Exodus, for example. Or if there's a particular thing that someone's really asking for loads, then we'll do that. Once a month, we try and do a big miniature as well, because we know that people always loved us doing that kind of thing at Games Workshop. And this time, well, now we can do the big thing on any brand of miniature. So usually that'll be towards the end of the month, and that'll be a whole week's shoot to do it. So people get less videos, but it's a longer, more detailed one. So that'll be things such as The Silent King, and we did a Mega Gargant, and this week we filmed the Shard of the Void Dragon. So, you know, it's always like a larger scale piece. So that kind of leads us to averaging about 8 videos a month, normally, sometimes a little bit more. Yeah, so it's difficult. It really is. And then, like, you'll carry on for a while and you'll realize, oh, man, we haven't done a historical figure for a while. We better do that. And then, oh, yeah, we need to do another techniques one. So it's a real juggling act. It's really difficult to keep on top of it. But the core thing is, I guess, all this rambling aside, the core thing is what our members want to see, we all do. And we're always trying to engage with them as best we can to find out what they want us to do. And then we'll, you know, produce content for that.
Okay. So I'm a video editor by professional trade, and I understand that when you watch a video, that is not the real length of time it takes to create that content. So for, you know, all the people listening, we're going to kind of pull back the curtain and, you know, ignore the man behind the mask. About how long does it actually take to paint some of these minis versus, you know, like your I guess the Blood Angel Marine video is a great example. You posted it and it's about 18, 19 minutes. And with editing, it's probably not. It didn't take that short of a time to actually get everything right for that video. So, you know, is it like, you know, is it like double the time, or is it like, you know, 20% longer? Like, yeah, is it? I know it's different for each video, but how long does it actually take to, you know, make this content versus what's produced and people can see when it's all finalized and you've got graphics and everything's kind of, you know, looking all sharp and polished?
Well, it's all, of course, revolves around the complexity of the model, and which means it's different for everything. But generally speaking, a standard infantry figure, like a normal miniature, let's say a Space Marine for argument's sake, will take about a day for us to shoot. And that also includes things such as we will have discussions about various things that we've got to do for the business, or we might have some emails that we need to do, or we might have a Skype meeting to do. We have our lunch break, of course, and it's all sort of fit around that. And so what will normally happen is we'll shoot it, and then Roger has the footage, and then we move on to shooting the next video. Then Roger just edits kind of like sort of in the background and gets all ready for the end of the week. So our schedules kind of overlap. And whilst Roger's then finishing off the editing of stuff, I'm then preparing for the next thing. So we have kind of like a rolling sequence. It's a lot like what we did at Games Workshop, really, same sort of format. Now, for some miniatures are actually really simple. So the Uruk-hai that we did the other week for the Academy, we managed to shoot that in a morning. So it took us about 3 hours to shoot it. I mean, painting the actual miniature itself would probably take me about an hour, maybe. But the rehearsals and things, that's what extends it out. And like the meetings and things I mentioned. The Blood Angel, we then shot in the afternoon on the same day, because we had a bit of a scheduling thing where we had to produce two videos in one day. So that's why we did those two, because the classic Blood Angel is actually quite a simple miniature. A modern Blood Angel within the Primaris armor has about twice as many edges to highlight, so it takes twice as long to actually paint the thing. So you sort of have to kind of pick and choose based upon what time you got available. Generally speaking, a Games Workshop miniature will be far more detailed than anything else, so normally that will take longer to do. So, for example, when we do the Roman, I would expect to take a bit over half a day. By comparison, a Blood Angel, I'd expect a full day. So that's really how we work it. When it comes to the bigger miniatures, we give ourselves 3 days for it. Sometimes it goes over, sometimes it goes under. So the Void Dragon took us 2 days to do, whereas the Silent King took 4.5. So you see, it just varies based on the model. But we know each other very well from all the years we've worked together, so we're very flexible about each other's schedule, so we can easily work around each other to make things fit. But yeah, we certainly spend a lot of time filming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. All right. So another question I'd love to ask, and I think people are interested in this answer. Have you ever had like a boo-boo or a mistake or like something breaks on the model mid-recording and, you know, you'd have to go and like buy a new one or, you know, it's I don't know. Has that ever happened to you where you're like, uh-oh. We're in a tricky situation to actually kind of fix this, you know, like say Maul's head, like just cracks off and you just lose it and you're like, oh no.
we not very often. I mean, in the history of Roger and me working together, we certainly have had issues. And I suppose, I mean, a minor thing happened this week, I guess. So we were doing a figure for Modiphius. So they've got this weekend, I'm not sure when this podcast will go out, so it might have happened by now, but they're doing a thing called ModCon, so like an online convention that's going over the course of this weekend. And for part of it, we done a video for them of painting a model which they haven't announced yet. So that was really exciting that they sent us one of these things early so we could do a video on it. But we were, because we'd done the Void Dragon, we also had to get this done. And so time was of the essence. That means I'm using my trusty hairdryer to get paint to dry quickly. We had some textured paint on the base, so I was hairdrying it, but it was in one of those Citadel painting handles. Now, the base got so hot that the painting handle spring contracted it and started to make it kind of like bend a bit like a leaf, you know, like if you got a circular piece of paper and you started like bending it. So I then had to heat it up and flatten it back out again.
Oh, no.
So thankfully, with resin, you can do that. It didn't damage the model or anyway, you know, so it was all fine. But it was quite funny when I took it out of the handle at the end and realized the base had warped ever so slightly. It looked like a Pringle, you know, one of those crisps. so that's happened. We've had models occasionally. So we did a Death Rider of Krieg recently, and the first model I had for that getting ready was a very poor casting. So the brim on his helmet, for example, it caved in as soon as I started trying to clean mold right. Like there was a bit of residue in one of the eyepieces, and the front of the helmet started caving in. So that was a bit weird. But, you know, accidents happen. We did at Games Workshop years ago. We did when Age of Sigmar came out, we had the big box set. We were doing all the miniatures for that. And one of them was one of the Khorne figures. I forget what he was called, but he has like a whip. Do you know the one I mean?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't know what it's called.
He's got like a big belly and stuff, and he's got a helmet. I can't remember what he was called. Bloodstoker? Anyway, we were doing him. And again, time was off the essence, so I was using the hairdryer. Once again, the hairdryer to the rescue. And the model got so hot, the whip deformed. And like, oh no, let's try and bend it back into place. I didn't work with that stick. It's not a resin. So luckily we had a backup one. So I had to cut his hand off, glue the new one on, then paint it up to the same point where we were at, and then carry on. So I think that happened at the stage when we apply a wash to that detail. So yeah, if anyone watches that video back and they go to that part, it's suddenly a different hand stuck to him. Hopefully, no one's noticed so far. No. So things like that happen. But, you know, it's we don't really make big mistakes that cause like a disaster with a video. We're very efficient on the order that we do. We've been doing it for years. It's different now that the order we do things is different, but still very practiced at it. There's nothing really I can think of. There are some times when we actually do a mistake on purpose, because there are some models where it's difficult to paint the color scheme. So, for example, the Imperial Fist. So we've got a video in the Academy of painting an Imperial Fist. And so painting the yellow of their armor these days isn't at all difficult, especially when you're using some contrast paint and things. So it's nothing like what it used to be like. But if you make a mistake on the yellow, then that's actually harder, because if you're painting black details amongst the yellow and you get the black onto the yellow, well, how on earth do you get that yellow back? So when we were painting that Imperial Fist, we do on purpose splodge black onto its armor. So you can see, like, now if this happens, splodge, this is what you do. Immediately wash your brush, do this, and get it like that. Now you might not notice it, but doing this minimizes the problem anyway. But then after that, what you do is this, and we show the whole sequence. And by the end of it, you can't even tell the mistakes there. So we have at times got into that sort of thing, just to show people that, you know, if you make an error on something, don't be scared about it. You can always rectify it.
Oh, that's actually very cool. It makes sense because you guys are trying to teach people in the community how to paint, but it's also practical to showcase the obvious error that everyone's going to happen across at some point. Like, we all are going to make a boo-boo, but knowing how to fix that is so, so beneficial, as opposed to, uh-oh, what do I do now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not about showing off, look, I'm going to do this highlight and it's going to be perfect. It's much more about, this is actually how you do it. These are the situations you're going to encounter. And right from way, way, way back, we made quite a point of, like, in those very early test videos, some of the feedback on them was that, like, if you do these few base coats at this stage, the model looks super rough because everything's a bit messy and you're neatening up as you're adding further base coats, but it looks really messy. And in the photograph guides, every step would look super neat. And it's not really a realistic reflection as to what the thing would actually look like when you're really doing it in the situation yourself. And so we pushed back on that of, like, well, that's what the model looks like. And if you then, like, if you paint your ultramarine, you paint all his armor blue, and then you repaint everything else that's not going to be blue with the original undercoat color again, that's just a pointless waste of time. So we're not going to do that. And we definitely try and stick to that, because if a video was deceptive and how things should look, then it's no longer useful. And I'm certainly not trying to show off myself being, like, ungodly neat on all these sorts of things. The way we do it in the video is literally how we do it in real life. And we definitely want to stick to that core aspect of, it's about tuition. It's not about showing off.
And I think many people appreciate that, because there is an opportunity for you and your team to show off, but you don't. And that kind of creates this really unique relationship, because we know that the content you're making is authentic. We know that we people who are not professional painters can mimic that skill. And it also makes all of the armies that are painted using these skills and techniques, they look better, the painters feel better, they're more confident, which enhances their painting ability over, you know, the course of time they spend painting. And it's such a really refreshing situation to be in, because, you know, you see a lot of rock stars and other medias, you know, like entertainment, you know, music, movies, so on. And sometimes they kind of flex a little bit on, you know, how popular or powerful or wealthy they are. And you guys don't do that. You make it so relatable. And that's wonderful. It's very, very wonderful.
Oh, I'm glad you should say so. Yeah. It's not about that. Even the Academy being named, like, using my name for it. It was actually a strategic decision so that people would be able to find us and would understand what they're going to get on the site. We had other names that we wanted to use, and it was Roger who suggested using my name for it. And I must admit, I wasn't really comfortable with it. But it makes sense, because it means people can find us. So it does that. But as long as people are learning stuff and enjoying it, then I'm happy with that. And it is magic to see people painting models that look like yours. One of the ones that I've actually found quite surprising was, fairly early on, we did a Lannister Guardsman for Ice and Fire by Cool Mini or not. And I've known, because I'm part of Facebook groups who play the game, because I'm really into that game. And every now and then I see someone posting a picture of their Lannister Guardsman, and they've painted them following our video, and you can see the little key points of, like, okay, so they painted the feather like that, that trim's done like that, that slight like that. These are fairly unique things that I have done compared to how other people have painted these models. And so you can see they've used the video and painted their stuff. And it's a game that a lot of people are accessing war games through, because it's sort of board gamey at the same time. And so it's really cool to see people painting their first miniatures following our guide and getting a great result. It's a real magic
feat. Yeah, that is incredibly cool. I really like Song of Ice and Fire. I'm kind of stuck. All of my game stores are closed due to the pandemic, so I can't play locally, unfortunately.
Man, check out Elder Scrolls or Fallout. You'll be all right. But I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I painted this Dothraki army, and I was actually, like, my goal was to paint it before the Final Fantasy VII remake came out. That was my original goal, because I love Final Fantasy VII, and I knew I'd end up spending, like, an ungodly amount of time playing that video game and not painting stuff. So I was, like, painting all the units and stuff. And the lockdown happened, and it's like, oh, okay, all the time in the world now. All right, I'll finish this army. Cool. It's now going to sit in my cabinet for the next few months before I can actually play with it. this tournament comes along, and it's like, oh yes, I can actually play the game. I'm going to take the new army I've just painted, and I've just finished some Unsullied to go with them, so I'll take them too, and some other characters, and then, right, how does this army work? Here I am, tournament day one. Don't know what I'm doing. As it turns out, it's the equivalent of playing with an Eldar army using the Targaryen.
I think you move and roll some dice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's have a good time. They're actually really cool. It's a great way of finding out how they work, because they are definitely a finesse army. You're incredibly maneuverable. And as you know, having played the game, cavalry works really well in that game for how you can maneuver it. So I could like run circles around people. And in all these games, there was one that I lost against a guy who's very much into the competitive scene, and he knew what he was doing. And the other games were a bit more casual. And in all of them, I could have won had not one thing happened that went against me. And then everything cascaded and I lost. But the last game was just the other way around, that I only just won. And weirdly, it was because of the Outriders, who everyone thinks is a rubbish unit, because they just got a missile attack, just got bows, they can't attack in close combat. But they're mounted cavalry, so they're very maneuverable. And we both had one unit holding an objective, but I had... cavalry. We had two units holding objective. I had one holding objective. So I had a time limit to kill one of his units before the victory score counted up and he won. And because I had archers and he didn't, I was able to just keep running around him quickly and shooting him in the side. So it was in like the vulnerable point. And then when that unit finally died, I snatched the objective and ran off without cavalry. So, yes, I did it from cavalry holding objectives. So yeah, I had a great time. It was really fun. I can't wait for things to go back to normal, just so I can carry on playing this morning. Now they've got the dragons coming out and there's more Unsullied on the way, and I want to use all these things. But yeah, man, I had a great time. It's really good. If anyone's not played Ice and Fire by Simon, you should really check it out. It's a really well-designed game.
Yeah, it is a really well-designed game. It's got a good price point. The plastic is really nice. I do like the fact that it's different colors per faction, so if you don't want to paint it and you kind of want to play it board game style, you can. But if you want to paint it like some of us do, the models do look very, very good. And it feels kind of like a mix between like a fantasy Age of Sigmar and like a World War X kind of game, because you have all these models and they're in the regiments, and you know, you've got your flanks and your rear. Like, there's so much going for that game. I think it's a really, really fun system. It is a well-designed system. I like it a lot.
It really is. It really is. Yeah, it has a sort of a feel of old Warhammer a bit, doesn't it? But in a modern way.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it has that sort of entrenched feeling. There's so many humans, so it all feels relatable. It's really, really good. And you can also, like, these starter armies, because like all the factions have a starter box, and it costs in the UK, it's about £80 for each one. But in it, you get an army that will give you a whole force that's between 30 and 40 points, and 40 points is your tournament standard. So you've got, like, some of them, in fact, the Targaryen one is a 40-point army. And so you can play in a tournament straight out of the box if you want to, without having to paint anything. But these armies are normally really good combinations. I think the Free Folk's the only one that's difficult to use straight out of the box. But all the rest, I mean, that game I told you about was just the units that are in the starter box. And you get multiple characters, and depending on who's your general, the whole tactic strategy of how the army behaves changes. So you, even though you might have the same army, by swapping the general, suddenly the army behaves differently. So you get some replay value there. So yeah, it's a really quality game. I think Cool Mini have like really struck gold with that one.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get that to the table once COVID kind of ends itself. But speaking of looking into the future, as we kind of wrap up the show, looking into 2021, do you have any specific models or game systems that you're kind of eyeballing? Because you had mentioned you've got some big plans for next year, and I'm curious if you can kind of hint at some of the things you guys are eyeballing for, you know, next year, because there's a lot of stuff that's available and a lot of stuff that's coming out, and I love to hear what you guys are pondering.
Well, I think so. The wargaming industry at the moment is really, it's really alive with the possibility, because everything's going very well for it. You know, there's all these new companies appearing and creating some really amazing miniatures now. So we're looking to explore some more of this stuff. So there's a number of things. Roger would kill me if I talked about it. So like, we've got some ideas of concept of videos and things that I don't think people are going to expect that we're going to be doing. And this is going to be like in ways of kind of like make people aware of things that they might have been aware of. So we're looking in all sorts of interesting things. And we want to have a go at, because we've done these big Games Workshop miniatures, like, you know, like the Void Dragon. But we'd like to do similar things like that for other games. So Modiphius have announced for Elder Scrolls, that they're doing one of the dragons, seeing as their game is currently set in Skyrim, you know, for the Skyrim video game. They talk they want to do all the different games, all the different provinces that are in Tamriel, but they want to do one of the dragons. And it's like, oh, sweet. We want to do a video on that. Because judging by the scale and how they very... Judging by Fallout, this dragon, I expect, is going to be big. So we definitely want to do a full video on painting that. Same with Ice and Fire. They've got War Mammoth on the way, and they've got the Daenerys and her dragons, so we want to cover things like that. So kind of expanding into these other things and sort of like stuff that people might not expect and putting on a pedestal and showing it to them. So, you know, if people want to kind of expand their horizons on various different war games and things that are out there, then I think we're going to be covering a lot of that kind of thing. We are looking to do some quite hefty updates on our website because we kind of, we figured it all out ourselves, but now we're learning more and more about how you can make these things better. So people can expect lots of new features on the Academy itself, things like the forum that we introduced a few months ago, things like that, you know, quite ground shaking aspects for us that are going to really improve the quality of the interactivity. But also we're looking to improve things like the tuition, trying to make things clearer, improving our shots, getting higher definition, putting more detail into the video so you can learn more stuff. And we're also finding that there's things that you just take for granted when you're painting that get kind of missed. So we're looking at doing lots of 101 stuff, almost like a course. So anyone looking to just begin and don't know where to start, things that will take them through. And then beyond that, we're looking at doing some more advanced things too. So we've already started playing around with enamels and pigments and stuff like that. We want to carry on doing techniques videos for more advanced stuff. So it's just kind of an expansion on the Academy as to what you've seen so far and making it cooler and better. So there's loads to do. It's really exciting. There's one video, in fact, that Roger and I were talking about this week that I'm so excited to do. I think it's going to be so much fun, but I think people are going to have to wait a few weeks for that.
All right. Well, that's fair. That's tantalizing bit of information that keeps us on the edge of our seats and will keep our eyes on your content. So as we wrap up the show, please tell everybody, where can they find your content? How can they sign up for the Academy? Like, what kind of stuff do you offer? Because we want to make sure that everyone who's listening is aware of just what a wonderful resource you and Roger have available to the community.
The core thing is our website, which is at duncanrhodes.com. This is the Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy, which is a membership website. It's £3.99 a month, for which you get full access to the entire site. And this includes the videos, of which we currently have over 85, I believe. And we are averaging adding two every week. And these are full in-depth tutorials taking a miniature start to finish or exploring a particular technique. We also have a forum on there, and we encourage all our members to talk to us, tell us what they want to see, and then we all, you know, look into that and give them the content that they want. We've had a lot of requests about things like yearly memberships and things like that. So we're looking at all these additional parts. So you'll see it develop a lot over the coming year. But yeah, that's the real core place of where you'll see the content. And there is a lot of content there now. There's also a complete detailed gallery for every video showing the miniature that we painted front and back and different angles. So you can see what bits are what, and you can, you know, fully grasp it. It's like a big, big high definition picture. So if you're interested in these games, actually, and you want to see what the models look like for, say, Fallout, Wasteland Warfare, you can certainly do so there at real high definition. You can also find us on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel, Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy, where we put up a video usually once every 2 weeks, sometimes a little bit more frequently than that. And these will be kind of sample videos as to what's in the Academy. So they are still full painting tutorials, start to finish. We don't edit them down because we think that'd be a bit mean. But by watching a video there, on the Academy is same sort of content, but just vastly more of it. We also have various social media channels. So we have a Facebook page, again, Duncan Rhodes Painting Academy. We have a Twitter account that you can find me at Two Thin Coats. And we have an Instagram as well, which is at Duncan J. Rhodes. And through all these things, you can talk to us, and either be Roger or myself who talks to you, because there's no one else working in this company just yet. It is literally us. And we certainly do encourage anyone to get in contact with us, tell us what they think, what they'd like to see. Any feedback is great. We are very much here to help people access the hobby and learn the things that they want to learn and achieve the results that they want to achieve.
Yeah, so this has been a wonderful interview. I'm so thankful that we've been able to talk a couple times this year, and I hope you guys have an excellent end of 2020. I'm really excited to see what you guys have in 2021, and we will definitely have you on again to talk about all kinds of fun things, like, you know, did you beat Final Fantasy VII? Are you ready for the second game whenever that may come out? Tell us more cavalry stories about how you stole someone's point.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. It's always great to talk to you. And for the record, I did finish Final Fantasy on normal mode, currently going through on the hard mode. It is actually quite hard. But yeah, I suppose Merry Christmas, everybody, is what I should say. And to everyone who's been following us this year, just a real heartfelt thank you. It means so much to Roger and me, who were terrified at the start of this year, not knowing what was going to happen. And then the COVID thing happened. But we've been having an amazing time, and we just want to do more of it.